Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
So the jig is up, AMPTP. We stand tall. You have to wake up and smell the coffee. We are labor and we stand tall and we demand respect and to be honored for our contribution. You share the wealth because you cannot exist without us.
More than 160,000 actors have begun their first major strike since 1980. And for the first time since 1960, actors and screenwriters are on strike at the same time, shutting down Hollywood. We'll get the latest. Then we look at the catastrophic rise of global hunger.
345 million people are facing acute food insecurity. This is a major increase when compared to 2020. It's a 200 million increase. It's a staggering.
And then we'll speak to Gray Anderson, editor of the new book, NATO Politanism, the Atlantic Alliance Since the Cold War. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. The United Nations warns one out of every 10 people around the planet faced hunger in 2022, an increase of more than 120 million people compared to the year before the pandemic. As many as 783 million people went hungry last year. The UN says Africa remains the worst affected region, with one in five people facing hunger on the continent. The findings come as Russian President Vladimir Putin is threatening to abandon the Black Sea grain deal brokered by the UN and Turkey, which grants Ukraine safe passage to export food and fertilizer. Unless Russia agrees to an extension, the agreement will expire on Monday. In Kyiv, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky accused Putin of using food as a weapon.
It is very important that there are no threats to food security anywhere in the world. And Russia must clearly realize that anyone who increases the threat of famine, particularly in critical regions of Africa, is terrorizing the whole world with hunger, not just someone individually.
A senior commander of Russian forces in occupied southern Ukraine says he was fired after he accused Russia's defense minister of betraying troops under his command. In an audio recording posted online by a prominent Russian lawmaker, Major General Ivan Popov, who led Russia's occupation in Ukraine's Zaporizhia region, lashed out at Russian defense minister Sergei Shoigu and Valery Gerasimov, the commander of Russia's invasion force in Ukraine. Popov blamed the men for mass deaths and injuries of Russian soldiers and blasted them for not supplying troops with enough weapons and ammunition.
Our army has not been crushed from the front by the Ukrainian army, but has been attacked from the rear by our commanding officers. They traitorously and villainously beheaded the army in its most tense moment.
On Thursday, Russian President Vladimir Putin said publicly the Wagner Group had no legal basis and said the private mercenary company's legal status needs further consideration. The Pentagon says it believes Wagner forces are no longer participating in Russian military operations in Ukraine in any significant way, following Wagner's failed June 23rd revolt. The whereabouts of Wagner's former leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, remain unknown. Russian lawmakers have unanimously approved a new law banning gender-affirming and other medical care for transgender people. The measure will also annul marriages of trans people and prohibit them from becoming foster or adoptive parents. This is the latest attack on LGBTQIA Russians who face an intensifying crackdown over the last decade under President Vladimir Putin. This is a Russian LGBTQIA rights activist.
According to this research, 72% of trans people experience depression or attempted suicide. 72% of Russian trans people. This statistic is huge. And I can predict this law was this will lead to increasing these numbers.
The FDA has approved the first over-the-counter birth control pill to be sold in the United States. Opill is expected to be available from brick-and-mortar stores and online early next year. The milestone comes amid the Republican assault on reproductive rights and 1 year after the Supreme Court reversed the constitutional right to an abortion. The manufacturer, Dublin-based Perrigo, has not specified the price of Opill yet, but said it is committed to making it, quote, accessible and affordable to all. In other reproductive rights news, abortion providers in Iowa have filed a lawsuit against the state's recently passed six-week abortion ban. Governor Kim Reynolds is expected to sign the bill into law today. The Health and Human Services Department has confirmed the death of an unaccompanied migrant child who'd been in its custody since May. A 15-year-old migrant girl from Guatemala, whose name has not been released, died Monday of multi-organ failure at a hospital in El Paso, Texas. She reportedly suffered from an underlying illness. She's the fourth migrant child to die in U.S. custody this year, as officials have been accused of severe medical neglect and other abuses. Canada's Interagency Forest Fire Centre says it's monitoring 906 active wildfires from coast to coast, as smoke from the unprecedented blazes is forecast to head south today, triggering another round of air quality alerts in the Midwestern United States. This comes as a massive heat dome stretching across the U.S. is set to intensify over the weekend, impacting over 100 million people. On Thursday, Phoenix, Arizona logged its 13th consecutive day of temperatures above 110 degrees Fahrenheit, with the city on track to break its all-time record of such scorching hot days next week. Actors unionized with SAG-AFTRA are officially on strike as of today. Some 160,000 Screen Actors Guild members are joining around 11,000 film and television writers who've been on the picket line since May, effectively bringing Hollywood to a standstill. The strike prohibits members from both acting in and promoting films and TV shows. Actors are demanding better wages, residual pay, and protections in an era where streaming services dominate and AI threatens the livelihood of entertainers. This is SAG-AFTRA President Fran Drescher.
It is a slippery slope into a very dangerous time and a real dystopia if big business corporations think that they can put human beings out of work and replace them with artificial intelligence. It's dangerous and it's without thinking or conscience.
We'll have more on the strike by Hollywood actors and writers later in the broadcast. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a federal grand jury has ruled the man responsible for the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history is eligible for the death penalty. The 50-year-old gunman was found guilty last month on 63 federal hate crime and civil rights charges for his attack on worshippers at the Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018. He still faces state charges, including 11 counts of murder. Writing in the foreword, Beth Kisilev, the wife of Rabbi Jonathan Perlman, who survived the massacre, said she was glad the jury found the shooter guilty and eligible for the death penalty, but added, quote, "I hope they do not vote to carry it out. The best way to commemorate those lost is not to focus on revenge, but to find a meaningful way to emulate their deeds and honor them," unquote. Fox News is facing another defamation lawsuit for spreading falsehoods in the wake of the 2020 election. On Wednesday, Trump supporter Ray Epps sued the far-right network after former host Tucker Carlson repeatedly accused him of being an undercover FBI agent who incited the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Epps says he and his family have since received death threats. His lawsuit states, quote, "As Fox recently learned in its litigation against Dominion voting systems, its lies have consequences." In April, Fox News paid $787 million to settle Dominion's lawsuit, charging the network defamed the voting machine company by airing false conspiracy theories it helped rig the presidential election. Fox News still faces a $2.7 billion lawsuit brought by Smartmatic, another maker of electronic voting machines. Egypt has announced the sale of $1.9 billion in state assets amid an economic crisis and record high inflation. The sale of 32 state companies, including hotels, telecom and oil firms, to Egyptian investors and a United Arab Emirates investment fund is part of a turn towards privatization. Egypt has also imposed austerity measures, including cuts to subsidies for fuel, water and electricity, in exchange for billions of dollars in loans from the International Monetary Fund. Nearly one-third of Egypt's population lives in poverty, according to government figures. And in Italy, outrage is mounting after a judge cleared a school employee of groping a 17-year-old student, arguing the assault didn't constitute a crime because it lasted less than 10 seconds. The student from a Rome high school reported the 66-year-old employee after the incident last year. He admitted to touching the student without consent, but claimed it was a joke. Social media users have responded by posting videos in which they grope themselves for 10 seconds, accompanied by hashtags which translate to hashtag 10 seconds and hashtag brief groping. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Amy Goodman is traveling today and will be back on Monday. Television and film actors are heading to the picket line today after the National Board of the Screen Actors Guild voted unanimously to go on strike. The vote came after talks with a federal mediator aimed at hammering out a new labor contract failed at the 11th hour. More than 160,000 members of the union are taking part in the first major actor strike since 1980. The strike comes 2.5 months after Hollywood screenwriters also walked off the job. This marks the first time since 1960 that actors and screenwriters have been on strike at the same time. As actors join writers on the picket line, they're demanding better pay and protections in an era where streaming services dominate and artificial intelligence threatens the livelihood of entertainers. SAG-AFTRA President Fran Drescher spoke Thursday.
What happens here is important because what's happening to us is happening across all fields of labor by means of when employers make Wall Street and greed their priority and they forget about the essential contributors that make the machine run. We are the victims here. We are being victimized by a very greedy entity. I am shocked by the way the people that we have been in business with are treating us. I cannot believe it, quite frankly. How far apart we are on so many things. How they plead poverty. That they're losing money left and right when giving hundreds of millions of dollars to their CEOs. The entire business model has been changed by streaming, digital, AI. This is a moment of history that is a moment of truth. If we don't stand tall right now, we are all going to be in trouble. We are all going to be in jeopardy of being replaced by machines. You cannot change the business model as much as it has changed and not expect the contract to change too. We're not going to keep doing incremental changes on a contract that no longer honors what is happening right now with this business model that was foisted upon us. What are we doing? Moving around furniture on the Titanic? It's crazy. So the jig is up, AMPTP. We stand tall. You have to wake up and smell the coffee. We are labor and we stand tall and we demand respect and to be honored for our contribution. You share the wealth because you cannot exist without us. Thank you.
That was SAG-AFTRA President Fran Drescher, who's well known for her role in the 1990 sitcom The Nanny. The Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, which represents major television and film producers, accused the Actors Union of walking away from negotiations. In a statement, AMPTP said its offer included historic pay and residual increases, as well as a, quote, groundbreaking AI proposal that protects actors' digital likenesses. Well, to talk more about the strike, we're joined by Shan Sharma. He's an actor who's part of the SAG-AFTRA negotiating committee. One note of disclosure, Democracy Now! Employees are represented by SAG-AFTRA, but are covered by a different union contract than actors. Shan Sharma is joining us from Salt Lake City, Utah, where he's been filming the fourth season of The Chosen. Shan, welcome to Democracy Now! If you could respond, explain and elaborate the reasons for this strike. What are the demands?
Well, first of all, we didn't ask for this strike. We've been negotiating in good faith for over a month. We had a truncated negotiation window to begin with simply because of the Writers Guild negotiations and then the Directors Guild negotiations giving us just 3 weeks. We came in with a very fair package from the very beginning of the process, and it became clear to us pretty quickly that the representatives of our employers were not interested in negotiating with us in the same way, and they were stalling us. We granted a unprecedented 12-day extension to continue to negotiate, which they wasted, canceled meetings, and seems like it was just a ploy to try to promote their summer movies before they knew we would eventually have to go on strike, because there seems to be a concerted effort by these companies to try to break the entertainment unions. DGA did not fight them in the way that the Writers Guild is, and now SAG-AFTRA is, and so they want to impoverish us in order to force us to accept a bad deal.
And Shan Sharma, could you explain the concerns around streaming as well as artificial intelligence?
Well, streaming, of course, this is the first year that streaming became the primary way that people consume their media. And our contracts are built for a very different time, stemming from linear television on broadcast networks and cable. So there was a relationship between the shows needing to grab audiences and sell advertising, and we would have a participation in kind of a long tail of revenue that is generated by both the initial broadcast of a program and also the syndication of programs. Now, with streaming, they've gotten rid of any of those performance-based tails of revenue that we participate in for a subscription fee that they collect, but we don't share any part of that revenue. So we have been squeezed down and shoved out of participating in a major way that our members support themselves financially. With artificial intelligence, they now have the technology and are fighting to try to alter the proposals we have to protect our members. They've tried to reconfigure and rewrite the proposals that we're just asking for basic human right protections, to try to have the right to scan us, own our likeness in perpetuity, including after we're dead, use us in their movies without any consent, without any compensation to our performers, especially background performers. It's inhumane, it is dystopian, and it's very frightening, because we just saw through the pandemic that performers help our culture survive through, for example, a once-in-a-generation or once-in-a-lifetime health emergency. And at a time when our value is clearer to the community than ever, it seems our employers want to diminish us more than ever.
Well, as we mentioned, you know, the last time that writers and directors were on strike was in 1960. At the time, just to give a sense of how much things have changed, of course, there was neither streaming nor artificial intelligence. And Ronald Reagan was the president of SAG, which had not yet merged with AFTRA. At the time, at the end of the strike, both unions had won health care benefits, pensions, and movie residuals. If you could comment on that and what you're still hoping may come out of this, when are talks set to resume?
Well, we don't have any talks that are scheduled to resume because we just declared the strike yesterday. Two nights ago, we sat across from our employers' representatives and we said, we are ready to negotiate in good faith, but you have clearly not been operating in good faith. There were threats against our members made by the by their side of the negotiations, including threatening our careers. They lied to the press. They leaked things to the press to violate our media blackout. They insulted children and the rights of children on sets and in their health and pension contributions. It has been unconscionable what we've witnessed. It's like sitting across the table from the sociopath Timothy that seems to be in charge of corporate America today, where apparently CEOs can get performance-based bonuses, but employees that make all of that possible do not. And so it's frightening, the situation that we're faced with. So there's no current talks that are scheduled. As for the 1960s, I wouldn't be an actor today if it wasn't for the health plan that was established at great cost by the sacrifices of our members in 1960, including them foregoing all of their residuals up until that point to establish the pension and health plans that we enjoy to this day. And that health plan has been gutted by our employers over the last 40 years to the point where members like the late, great Ed Asner, who used to be president of the Screen Actors Guild, he gave up all of his residuals before 1960 to establish the health plan, only for him to be removed from it at the age of 91 when the health plan was forced to make changes because our employers have not improved the employer pension and health contribution caps, the pension and health contribution caps that fund our health plans. So we are in an existential moment, both with AI, but we're also in an existential moment to the basic rights of health care and the ability to pursue what we love and have retirement income after a prosperous career.
Well, Sean, you mentioned, of course, corporate America and the position of prominent CEOs. Let's go to Disney CEO Bob Iger, who appeared on CNBC Monday and criticized the actors' union for calling a strike.
I think it's very disturbing to me. We've talked about disruptive forces on this business and all the challenges that we're facing and the recovery from COVID, which is ongoing. It's not completely back. This is the worst time in the world to add to that disruption. There's a level of expectation that they have that is just not realistic. And they are adding to a set of challenges that this business is already facing that is, quite frankly, very disruptive.
So they're not being realistic?
No, they're not.
Why not?
I can't answer that question.
So that was Disney CEO Rob Iger, who makes $27 million a year. He was speaking from Sun Valley, Idaho, where he's attending a gathering that has been described as a summer camp for billionaires. So if you could respond to what he says and also explain, you know, people have a sense that Hollywood is all about celebrity and enormous sums of money for performers. But I just want to quote what actor Denise Cabanella said on Thursday. She said, it's a very, very small percentage of the 160,000 plus member union that can actually make a living off the work that
That's
we
correct.
Do. So if you could talk about that, respond to what the Disney CEO said, and then what, in fact, how many people make a living wage from acting?
Yeah, that interview with Bob was incredibly sad for anybody who works in entertainment, and especially those of us who create the work that allows for him to be paid as highly as he is paid. It's so tone deaf to think that someone like him, who can, you know, get all the I think in his contract he's going to get a 500% bonus to his base salary based on the performance of Disney stock, whereas the performers that give that company its value, they are refusing to allow us to participate in the revenue that we generate for them. These companies have engaged in an absolutely reckless spending on programming over the last few years, trying to compete for subscriptions, which we don't participate in any of that revenue. And now that they've overextended themselves and are starting to shift to a more advertising-supported model, similar to television, now they're claiming poverty simply because Wall Street is not demanding growth, it's demanding profitability. That is not our fault. We are the employees. Those risks that these companies have taken is on our backs. And for him to lecture us about being disruptive, they have disrupted the lives of all of our members who are trying to make a living in this industry. Shame on him for saying something like that. As our president said, the reason we have unions is because people do not do the right thing. And as somebody who's made his career out of entertainment, he should know better than to condescend to the incredible performers that give his company value. So I don't really know what else to say about that.
Could you talk about the issue of audition pay, which has been required for over 86 years but has never been put into effect?
Well, that's not actually true. In the early days of our union, everybody was under contract. Almost all of our performers were contract players at MGM or Paramount or Disney, et cetera, which means not only were they paid for their auditions, they were also paid for a weekly salary. They were also developed with acting classes, dancing classes, movement, et cetera, a great comprehensive classical training because we were assets of these studios. When the Olivia de Havilland decision challenged those contract systems and what used to be known as the star system, the studio star system, started to end. For independent performers who weren't under contract, we were entitled to compensation for the creative labor that we put into our auditions. But now, since the studio star system has gone away, virtually none of us are under contract. The audition pay provisions of our contract ensure that the creative labor that we put into the pre-production process of productions, where we actually interpret the material, help them see the writing in a new way, it leads to changes in the storytelling. Sometimes they'll rewrite the part, rewrite the script. So we contribute our intellectual property to the pre-production process, and that was always meant to be compensated for. But today, we are now forced to carry the burden of the casting process because they're no longer doing in-person casting. They're forcing us to tape ourselves in our own homes using our friends and family as also free labor for these auditions, and they expect us to do it all without compensation. Our members were not aware that these provisions were in our contract because we have a contract literacy challenge within our union where our members do not read and are not educated properly about their contracts. We are changing that. But none of that changes the fact that not only are we doing the technical labor that casting used to do, we're doing the creative labor we've always done, and now our friends and family are being treated as free employees for our employers as well to read with us for our auditions. So audition pay is a very important way that we can inject almost $1 billion into our working class members of the union, which, by the way, your previous question, only 12.5% of our members qualify for health insurance. And the qualifying threshold for health insurance is only $26,470. That means 87% of our members do not earn over $26,000 a year. And that's a shocking thing for the performers of 170,000 strong performers we have that do most of the TV and film work that is professional that the AMPTP produces.
Thanks so much, Sean Sharma. Sean Sharma is an actor and a member of the SAG-AFTRA negotiating committee. Coming up, Gray Anderson, editor of the new book, NATO Politanism, the Atlantic Alliance Since the Cold War.
I will stand right here, maybe forever, until you regret whatever you have done to keep us together. I would so much rather forget what you said.
Dear Whoever, by our previous guest, Sean Sharma. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. We turn now to look more at this week's major NATO summit in Lithuania, where the military alliance agreed to invite Ukraine into NATO at some point once conditions are met. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky blasted the lack of a timeline as absurd. This comes as NATO is moving closer to expanding once again. Earlier this week, Turkey dropped its opposition to inviting Sweden into NATO. Once formally approved, Sweden will become the 32nd nation in NATO, which began in 1949 with 12 founding members. We're joined now by Gray Anderson. He's the editor of the new book, NATO Politanism, the Atlantic Alliance Since the Cold War. He co-authored a recent piece for the New York Times titled NATO Isn't What It Says It Is. Gray Anderson, welcome to Democracy Now! If you could first respond to what happened at the NATO summit in Vilnius this week.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I suppose the two big news items, which you've just mentioned, consist in Turkey's abandonment of opposition to Swedish accession to the alliance and the refusal to grant Ukraine more kind of concrete guarantees concerning the timeline for its own eventual membership. I don't think either of these developments is terribly surprising to anyone who's been following the story as it has unfolded. At the same time, one can understand, I think, why the government in Kiev was disappointed not to receive more substantial guarantees. Stephen Wertheim was on this show recently, and he rightly invoked the precedent of another summit 15 years ago in Bucharest, at which the alliance, on the initiative of George W. Bush, made the fateful decision to promise not just Ukraine, but Georgia, eventual membership in the alliance. And I think, although the role of NATO and NATO expansion in triggering this conflict has been very controversial, today most, I think, people would agree that this 2008 decision was a fiasco. It was neither fish nor